pain.
It's like my dreams out of reach. This pain and all this grief. If you see God and you have to speak, tell him it's crazy in these streets. Feel my pain and you're so deep.
Yo, I'm Pastor Phil. Welcome to Church on the Block, real talk about hip-hop, the church, and the streets with my great co-host, Pastor Jay and Ruck Boy on Holy Culture Radio, Sirius XM.
Welcome to Church on the Block. That's right. You are back with us, Holy Culture Radio, Channel 140 on Sirius XM Radio. Man, we are here Sunday, 9 a.m. Central Time, which is really the only time that really matters in the middle of the earth, middle of the U.S., 10 Eastern Time, man. And we are talking about, in our work at this the show, Real Talk about Hip Hop, the Church, and the Streets. And we want to not just talk about things that are understood by church or by people of faith, but things that are understood but never maybe talked about or challenged or brought up. I mean, we got some things we're going to be talking through here the next couple of weeks that may bring up some kind of stuff for people, you know, the gift of tongues, speaking in tongues, non-speaking in tongues, right? What things that people would argue about for a long time, but how that creates a lot of confusion amongst a lot of people still, even to this day. We're going to get into that, you know, later on. But this is what this show is about, man. It's trying to touch, you know, those subjects, looking at those subjects from LGBTQIA+ to should you carry a gun in a pulpit? You got concealed to carry. I mean, being able to have real discussions around things that sometimes people have questions about, wonder about, and maybe even never knew that the church would even talk on these things. So that's what this effort is with this show, man. Church on the Block, real talk about hip hop, the church, and the streets. And today we got a great brother, a great friend, a great leader that God has been using in powerful ways, man. The Reverend Doctor. Pastor Russell St. Bernard, man, good brother, man. He will, you know, in ministry, as you're in it for a long time, as you're in it for a while, you know, you run into cats who you have a kindred connection with, right? And in that kindred connection, you want to foster that together, right? To sharpen each other. And Russ is one of those brothers, man. Is a beautiful heart connected to what God is doing in ministry in his own life, not intimidated to express that space, and owns and knows his own value and worth, man. And so I just want to introduce everybody to my friend, Pastor Russ. We're going to talk through this show today about an array of different things around, you know, the Black church and the movement of ministry, youth, and the work that he's doing right now. So Russ, welcome to Church on the Block, man.
Man, Pastor Phil, I appreciate you, man. Love you, bro. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate you having me on this way. I appreciate that you call me a friend, and I call you a friend, but I also call you the homie, the big homie, a mentor. I was saying it off tape, but man, you are one of a handful of brothers, man, that God used to allow for me to allow my gift to get into that room. You know, the word says that your gift will make room for you and allow you to be in the presence of great people. You were one of those brothers that when my gift got in the room, you were there and then you were able to point me to other rooms, man. And so I'm thankful for you and excited about this conversation, man. Excited about what God has opened up, man, and looking forward to seeing what we're going to say.
Yeah. Grateful for that, Russ. And man, I know as we connected just a little while ago, you've been there. When my daughter was in going to Morgan State, man, and trying to grab them to help them go to a concert or do some things back and forth that was going on at that time, man. So just grateful for that longevity together in ministry, man. And looking forward to, I'm grateful to be on, you know, your show that was aired on the 10th, right? The 10th of January.
Yeah. This past a couple days ago, man. Ministry Pivot, you killed it, man. I'm encouraging everybody to listen. I had a hard time trying to find sound bites of myself. A person that helps me out in the background, Rial, was like, Russ, you didn't say a whole lot, Rev. I said, man, he said good stuff. I couldn't say nothing.
And man, I posted it. Some other folks have heard it and they really liked it and loved it, man. So grateful to be able to be a part of the movement of what you are doing as well, man. So, man, just introduce yourself to folks, man. What you know, where you're at, the role you're serving in now, and the type of church that is. We give people context and then a little history of where you come from in ministry.
Yeah, yeah. So let me go. So I am Russell St. Bernard. Rev Russ is super easy. Pastor Russ is only Facebook because I serve at a great church. And in my current denomination, there's only one pastor. So shout out to my pastor, Pastor Matthew L. Watley, because I don't want no smoke. I am Reverend Russ, and I serve at Kingdom Fellowship AME Church. Currently serve in a role. We have pillars of our church, gather, grow, give, and go. I'm currently over all gather. What that means in layman's terms is I serve over operations. But I started at the church as in youth ministry. Let me go back. So I am born and raised in Brooklyn. Love my family. I did church when I was home, but I really wasn't really a part of the church heavily until I got to college. When I got to college, I got saved, went to Morgan State. Big shout out, Morgan State University. Got saved in my senior year. I threw parties every other year beyond that senior year. I threw parties when I first got there. Cause I played, you know, I had, you know, I'm from Brooklyn, man. Biggie would say either you slinging clack rock or you got a wicked jump shot. I had a pretty good jump shot. So I had pretty good jump shot. Pretty good jump shot. But going to college is different. Going to college. So high school ball is different than college ball. I was red shirting, the first year. And I remember talking to my mom, after I didn't quite make the team, but I was close. And the guy was like, hey, you can red shirt, kind of be with us. My mom said, all right, cool. So if you're with them, that means you're not going to have a job. That means you're going to, you know, you're going to wear sweats and stuff. And I'm from Brooklyn. I said that a couple of times. I couldn't do it. So I ended up throwing parties. And I had all of the teams just come to my parties. But a long way.
Money on the party, though. You was making money on the party.
That's what I was endeavoring to do. I had a weekly party with a group of friends of mine called Wet Wednesdays. I was so far from knowing the Lord and really understanding, but I knew him. I just didn't like get him. You know what I mean? He had me because there were moments that if he didn't have me, it would have been a whole nother thing. But I end up getting saved, end up telling my fellas that I could no longer be a part of the group, end up moving from the house that I was living with them, doing all of this stuff, and got plugged in, man, and got plugged in the church and just really started to serve in a mentoring program, and understood that God wanted more of me. I was doing three different Bible, going to three different churches a week, man, for Bible study. I was just hungry. Like my thing was, if I could throw parties and be a part of parties in New York on a Sunday night and drive the turnpike home to Baltimore and change in the car to show up at my job in the morning and go to school at night, then if I can do all of that, then I can go hard for God in the same way. And so I did. And then it took a couple of years for me to really figure out that, yo, youth ministry was my thing. I've gotten books on it. We'll talk about that. I've been able to go around and be a part. I had a youth ministry tour that we did a little while ago, several years ago now. But I remember specifically, Phil, and I told you this off tape, but I'm going to say it here, that it was a moment where I started at Empowerment Temple, fully in ministry at Payne Memorial AME, but started really being able to do youth ministry heavily, lead at Empowerment Temple under Pastor Jamal Bryant when he was still there. And I remember I knew Black Church really well. I was following you. We would talk every now and again. I think I saw you like twice, and you were just always open and honest, but you were also always just you. Right. So like there was a moment in church history where you being authentic in those days, early 2000s, was you being, you know, hip hop is what it was. I mean, it's still now, but hip hop has kind of got a sheen on it a little bit now. So it's a little different. But this was hip hop with the, you know, I still got pictures of me calling myself the Hope Dealer. And I had a Bible with a fitted cap and a do-rag, and the Bible was on a chain. You know what I mean? Like, I remember, and you were that space. Because a lot of churches were like, yeah, even though we want you to relate, we don't want you to relate that much. And I'm like, I'm not even trying. Like, I'm just being me. Like, I'm just, right. And Pastor Phil Jackson was that guy that was like, yeah, no, you can be 100% you and still be effective. And so I remember to this day, man, I went to a workshop. We chopped it up after over some food. I told you I was really looking. I love my pastor, Pastor Bryant, at that point. But he encouraged me that, hey, if you really want more, go see if there's opportunities. And you connected me with a church in Florida, Pastor Wayne Lomax. Shout out to them. They just merged into a cool church. But you connected me with them, and Florida was an eye opener for me, man. It just showed me youth ministry. It showed me ministry in a whole nother way. I did that for a while, and then I left that church, came to where I am now. Actually, a couple years before that, came to where I am now. We were Reed Temple AME Church, and then our pastor, then senior pastor Lee P. Washington, retired, and Pastor Watley, who I came in under, was able to start Kingdom Fellowship, and I'm a founding minister. Man, I come from Brooklyn all the way, Pastor Phil, to I got my name on the documents for this church, man. My wow. name and address on the back of this church, man. So for years to come, decades to come, if somebody looks up the founding of the church, man, you got to put your address and your social in there. They gonna see little old Russell St. Bernard from Brooklyn, apartment 12B, Williamsburg Community Projects, man. It's crazy. Crazy.
Yeah.
All right. That was a lot. I don't know if you wanted all that.
That's exactly right. Now, that was powerful, man, because the journey of that, right? Yeah, again, as I was saying before, that in ministry, you know, when you accept a call to ministry, you don't even know initially where that's from. Like what, as you say in the word, or not you don't know where it's from, but you don't know what that means, especially the Black church where it's the pastor, maybe a minister of music, you know, maybe, you know, some other leaders in some capacity, but not a youth ministry or some other something that you may be passionate about. But since you've been called to ministry, you know, you're called to ministry. So it narrows, I think, in some regards to where you kind of get a focus of what it is that you're passionate about, and you're boldly committed to be that agent of change in the local church. And so I praise God for that journey. Like, what was it that you felt like diving into youth ministry? I mean, as you were going to those Bible studies, man, and getting fed, and getting hungry, and it may be, you know, that it was always in an aspect of that anyway, simply, you know, because you was a young person involved in these parties and kicking it. But was there conviction of a path, you know, to youth ministry in your journey?
Yeah, so there was, and I don't know if I've ever really articulated this heavily before, but I used to, so once I finally got saved and was really doing what I was supposed to be doing, my mom, big shout out to my mom, was lived in New York. She's in Maryland now with me, but she lived in New York, and she used to do these youth retreats in Delaware, and they went to Bethany Beach, Delaware. And I remember, so I would drive down and meet them. She's like, "Oh, Russ, you could do this. You could be a counselor." So I was like, "All right, cool, I'll help out." And I remember literally, Phil, I went. I've been able to swim for a while. Swimming is a part of my workout habit now. But I remember it was a kid, man, and one of the bad kids too. It was a kid, man, who went out. You know, you say don't go past this line. Obviously, you know what they do. They go out past this line. But you know, Brooklyn kid, and I remember seeing it, and like the lifeguard was kind of looking, but not really looking. But the kid was going further. I seen the kid flailing, so I had a shirt on. And I swam out to where the kid was to get the kid, but then I got caught in the undertow. And so now both of us are in the undertow. And I remember the lifeguard coming to get both of us. And I remember breaking down in the bathroom, bro. And I remember it as clear as day, God is saying, I need you to go get my kids, but I need you to come without the stuff on. I need you to go get my kids. I need you to come without the stuff on. Man, and I remember that like breaking me. And at that point, that for me was my shift moment. That for me was like, okay, I got to do this youth ministry thing, but I can't do it looking like somebody else. I can't do it acting like somebody else. And that was the shift, man. That was the pivot that I needed. And then I just started to really go hard at it and then really realize that I had a gift. And, you know, when I was younger, even now, every now and again, my stutter will come up. When I was younger, stuttering was a really big deal for me. Really had a hard time. And imagine, you know, in Brooklyn and people aren't, you know, yeah. The dozens was a thing. So, you know,
no doubt.
I'm quick with it. I'm quick with it because I had to be, because I had to always be with defense. Like, I knew that it was coming. But I remember.
Exactly.
And you couldn't do the father because the white father was around, unfortunately. That didn't work. But it just hit different. And I remember when I realized that the way I was able to explain, the way God gave me illustrations, the way God allowed me to look at songs and see them differently and be able to communicate that differently. And then Phil, I mean, I stopped counting some years ago, and I'm mad at myself for doing that. But I was, to God's glory, not mine, I was in the thousands, man. I used to count. So for me, when I went out to preach, some people counted their offering to see how much they made throughout the year. I didn't really hear about that. I counted how many people came up and how many salvations. And I was in the thousands, bro. Wow. And when I got into the hundreds, realizing that that was a thing, I was like, yo, I've got to do this. This is what I've got to do, because I went all through middle school, high school, and most of college without hearing the gospel in a way that made sense.
Wow.
And if it was my charge to speak it in a way that makes sense, I can get kids to start early. And from that, man, I've been blessed to see four or five kids who are still preaching to this day or still ministering to this day because of the ministry that God allowed me to do. We used to have a youth retreat that we used to do called Broken Out Here, where 400 or 500 kids would come every summer with different churches I would plant together. And we used to do Youth 7 Last Words. So on Good Friday, the adults would have their service. But we would have 7 kids who would preach from churches that I would partner with. And again, to God's glory, man, some of those kids are still preachers. Some of those kids are still leading, because that's the call. But I remember in Bethany Beach that moment and him like, yo, no, I'm calling you to get them without the stuff. I'm calling you to get them without the stuff.
That's dope. I love that's a whole. I know you didn't preach on that right there, yo. This is Pastor Philman, real talk about hip hop, the church, and the streets. Holy Ghost Radio, Channel 140 on Sirius XM Radio. We're gonna be right back with more with Pastor Russ. We are back, man. Church on the Block. Real talk about hip hop, the church, and the streets. Channel 140, Sirius XM, Holy Culture Radio. Big Trig and L. So we are here with my brother, my friend. God's used in powerful ways. We talked about that in the first part of the show. Reverend Russ, Russell St. Bernard, doing some awesome work, man. A powerful testimony of how God led him to serve in youth ministry and used him and is still using him in powerful ways in youth ministry, man. So Russ, talk about that, the evolution of your call. If you're not aware of your own rhythms, I think in life, in ministry, you may be a suffering, grumpy old usher, even though you should have stopped ushering, you know, 20 years ago, but you never thought of, you know, starting this fishing ministry with these young guys. That was an idea. You should have did it, but you didn't. Some kind of way you didn't see a fishing ministry thing. And so you didn't do that, but you're still an usher. Sometimes people are in ministry in certain spaces, maybe not necessarily beyond their usefulness, but they're not aware of God's nudging them in other ways that their leadership can still touch those areas. But just in your own movement of ministry, man, share that with us and share it in such a way maybe where cats who are listening in their own journey in ministry, you know, things that you had to go through, things you overcame, things you pressed through in that space. So they don't think they like man, but man, I could, but you know, have been able to overcome this us.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, man. I think the biggest thing, man, is being, as we talked about a minute ago, being authentic and relevant, right? But you need permission to do it. Shout out one of my it's crazy to say I got mentees now, but one of my mentees, Pastor Gerard, Gunner there in Memphis, he actually started and has started this thing called Riot Starter, and he has this thing that you don't need passion. They already got passion. They need permission. And I quote him in saying that, because you need permission to be who you are, right? And that's what I needed. I needed permission to be who I was, to be how God equipped me to be, and not be a carbon cutter of the next young preacher that looked a certain way. And again, I shout out to you, Pastor Phil, because you were an example of that. You were an example of being authentic to who you are, being authentic to where you are, but the being authentic to who God has called you to be. And I have this saying in one of my books, my first book, After Music Stops, that we have to allow young people, and I would say this to youth pastors, youth leaders, even now, we have to allow young people access to us, but it needs to be a window, not a door. And what I mean by that, and I say this all the time, is you need to allow them to see how real things were, but don't make it so appealing that it's a door that they want to try it, right? You need to be able to see that life was tough. See that I only saw my father legitimately four times in my life. See that my grandfather is the one who raised me with my uncle. See that my mom had to work 2 and 3 jobs. My mom put me on to how to hustle because she was taking pictures at school, high schools and school graduations. And I was the one holding the camera. And you know, this is back in the day with the actual Polaroid picture. And I'm waving the picture out. So, you know, I'm winging it with my hand so that we can see the picture. The person can give me the $5 so I can put it inside my mom's purse. Like, I allow them to see that, but don't allow them to think that they have to live that to be me. Mm-hmm. Be able to say, but the better structure is when the father stays. The better structure is when my mom was doing that because she didn't finish her college degree and she was working to finish it. But the better structure is to do it that way. So I think that was a big part. And that was a big part of what God did with me in ministry. So it was always the opportunity to be real and to be relevant, but also the opportunity to show them the revelation of what can happen, right? I think a lot of the times in youth ministry, we want to relate so much that we don't evolve and impact, right? Because at the end of the day, I don't want you to stay on the corner with me. I want you to come on the corner with me, but I want you to show me the corner office, right? I want you to show me that same corner store that I look at all the time as a spot to meet, but help me talk to the dude who worked inside because he owns the building, right? And the corner store is just a part of what he's doing. Like, I think for me, that's the evolution of what youth ministry needs to look like. The evolution of what ministry needs to look like is not just the relating, but it's moving forward. But the truth is that times are changing. And you and I have talked about this a little bit. I honestly, man, can only name one or two youth ministry that are still rocking and rolling the way they were rocking and rolling when I was doing full-time just youth ministry now. Now I'm over operations. So the youth ministry teams that I have now, big shout out to Our Kingdom Students Ministry, yeah. And Reverend Van or Mariah, Minister Ronnie. I was able, I'll say that in this part, I knew what I wanted to have when I was the youth pastor, but it took me to move into a different role, but to be able to write the job descriptions for what I know needs to be in the role. So now our senior youth pastor has a staff of 3 because I knew I needed a staff, but it wasn't for me to do it. It was for me to be able to move to the next space and then write it in. So now he has the opportunity that I didn't have. And maybe that's the role too, right? Maybe that's the opportunity that God is setting up for us to understand what needs to happen and for us to work it as best we can what we're given, but to set up a legacy for what's next. Because I tell you, I don't think there's a bigger joy I get in ministry now than having my 9-year-old daughter be a part of a student ministry that I set up, having my now 1-year-old son be a part of a nursery ministry that I help to set up when we had no kids and we had nothing going on. Like that's just, I think that's the turn of I think God's hand.
That's a powerful testimony right there, man. I mean, the reality that you still have your hand on it and moving within the leaders there, giving those leaders their own permission, right, to do and be themselves as they model it from you, and seeing your, like you say, seeing your own children involved in that and being blessed in that space. I think in ministry, you know, we started the house in 03, our hip-hop church, and had some great leaders come mm-hmm. through. And at times when it came to getting some cats to lead in a different way, like here's a particular outline, run with it, make it your own. Some cats didn't know what that meant, right? They hadn't necessarily owned their own, I think their own courage, strength, power, or if they did, they didn't know necessarily how to apply it. Then we had some cats who was ready to be on point, ready to serve and do even couples ministry, but I held on to them too close, meaning that we didn't release that in a timely way. And it's kind of like their calling got bottled up, and then they just like, and they end up going and serving at another church, which wasn't a problem. But I just learned something from that, like just being able to say, okay, let's build with you. Are you ready? This is what our ideas are. Let's start. Let's not assume anything. Let's put all this all on the table. So, you know, in that space, you're pouring into these leaders while they're able to kind of, you know, feel themselves out, right? Feel themselves in these spaces yeah. like that. You know, I think anybody in youth ministry and ministry in general needs to look at what it is they feel perhaps is the direction that they're serving, whether it's senior citizens or youth, and then figure out if you had a budget of like $1 billion, like what would you do? And just dream that out, put stuff on the board, sticky notes or whatever. And though you only got like $12, like go back and be like, okay, what are the exactly you know five positions volunteer wise I could create here? If I had $1 billion,
yeah.
I would do this, and I feel under the habit. Like the question I ask myself all the time when it comes to like a new vision or dream is, what is it I know I would do if I knew I couldn't fail? I couldn't fail. No way to fail.
Yeah.
No way to fail.
Yeah.
Man, then the ideas are endless in the context of what that would look like and pushing your own self and that creativity in that space. And then you go back up and be like, okay, here's how we got to get these steps going. But I say that because sometimes we hold people who may feel called to youth ministry at a particular role for too long. It may kind of like, man, I'm busting in the seams here. I want to run with that, man. So it's powerful.
I know for me, there's two things in that, but I know for me, early on in ministry, I had to pivot from one church to another church because the one church understood that I had a call, but they quoted the text in the Bible, which I wholeheartedly understand, but they quoted the text that said, you know, don't lay hand on any man quickly. Like, you know, you can have zeal, but you got to have the nurturing. And I was like, okay, cool. But what does that mean? And they were like, yeah, it doesn't mean I want you to stick around and kind of, and I'm all for watching people in ministry, but where I was, wasn't the space that I needed to, because for me, if I didn't jump in wholeheartedly to the church and kind of give it my all, I still got the same phone number and the same friends who are calling me saying, hey, you know, this artist came in town. Do you want to help us with this? Or, hey, you know, so-and-so said the building is open. Do you want to, you know, do a Friday night? Homecoming is coming. Do you want to, you know, go to the club to do a thing? Like, so I needed to be wholeheartedly in because I needed to trade. You know, it's like the text which says, you know, the scripture where it talks about if you get all of the unclean spirits out, they're going to come back seven times stronger if you don't fill it with something else, right? And I think what happens is, oftentimes in ministry, we are so slow to allow people in that then they're not able to occupy the space that God has ordained for them. But more importantly, you're not able to occupy the next space. So I always say that the less you do, the more you can do, right? So the more I give away, then the more I'm able to do on the other side. But if I don't give away anything, that I'm still trying to do the same thing, then I'm literally a bottleneck for other people. I'm not allowing for them to spew through because I'm trying to filter it all and I'm trying to filter it all to look like me. But if God wanted the next thing to look like me, he would just create 100 me's. Now, Russell is wonderful. I think I am great. We do the Clifton Strength Finders And I got self-assurance in like number eight, number nine. I know I'm right. Exactly. The Lord was born in Brooklyn. Like, it's the same thing. Like, we're all, that's what it is. But if the case is that everybody else is also unique, everybody else is also gifted, then I need to give it away so I can do something else and then see what they do with it. But as they do something with it, then I'm able to pick something else up. I think that's a lot of the tension when I was teaching and coaching, even youth ministry leaders and pastors, a lot of the tension of, well, they're not doing this. But the truth is, they're not doing it because you're still doing it. So if you gave it away and you did something else, that it would force them. And no, it's not going to look like how you did it, but you don't want it to look like how you did it. You just want it to get done. So that now wheel is running and now you can do what only you can do, right? I use this text all the time. And I'm going to say this laughing and I'm going to stop. Jesus in the text, when he's going to get Lazarus, he tells the disciples, roll a stone away. This is Jesus. The dude walked on water. The dude fed 5,000. The dude appeared out of nowhere in scriptures to come. So why could he not just blow the stone up or walk through the stone? The point was, and we know this and you know this, Phil, is Jesus wanted them to do what they could do so that he could do what no one else could do.
Right.
And it's the same thing in ministry, that we have to do what only we can do. And after we master that, we have to train that so somebody else can do it. And then we can go do something else that only we can do. And it's the same cycle. But many of us in youth ministry don't want to work ourselves out of a job. We still want significance, but you are significant if you do what you're called to do.
Yeah. I mean, and sometimes there are patterns where you're gifted to do what only you can do that's still in the tradition of that local church or local ministry. And then sometimes there are things that, you know, you're called to do that are outside of that particular tradition that they come with another layer of have courage, another layer of boldness to engage it in spaces like that. Because as things have evolved in ministry or even in life, I mean, you move from bottles to cans. People drink Coca-Cola out of a bottle. Now they drink out of a can. It's more whatever it is and health-wise, or maybe it's not. But in the context of there's this evolution in all of the phases. And sometimes people don't grasp, I think, even though they may be uncomfortable in, an evolution of things in ministry, you know, in those spaces like that. And so God, your way, as you recognize what it is you're called to do, roll that stone away in that space that you go for, because there are those who are waiting for what it is you have that God has got you called for to be impacted on. It's not like this God still won't use and you know, bring them to faith, but the unique gifts he's given you, as peculiar as it might look like, you know, God wants you to go for that, right? And do what God's called you to do specifically. I know brother started a ministry for folks who had disabilities, man, and he was, you know, called to the masses of folks, but specifically for folks who were on the margins with disabilities and poor folks with disabilities who may not have access to a lot. So he even built the church where the pews were bigger, well, not the pews, but the aisles were bigger. And there were spaces where there was no chairs. You just rolled the wheelchair right in that spot. You know, it was all a unique thing. But he built that, you know, because God called him in that space to do that. And, you know, other folks may question him or challenge him in that space. So what happens when folks aren't coming who got no disability? You know, whatever it might have been, but he stayed true to that space. It may have seemed peculiar to other people, but not to God. You know, this is Church on the Block, man. Real talk about hip-hop and church in the streets. With Reverend Doctor again, with Reverend Russ. That's him. That's what's now. We're gonna be right back. Stay right there. We are back. You're on the right channel, 140. That's right, Sirius XM, Holy Culture Radio. We in the building, Church on the Block, man, and we're here with my good friend, brother. Who's doing some powerful work in ministry, man, and for years, been on that, man, and and he's from Brooklyn. Got to say that.
That's right.
That is from Brooklyn. But no, man, Russell St. Bernard, great brother, man. And, you know, the evolution of youth ministry, the evolution of ministry in general, and your own life, and the testimony of all of that, man, to me, even in the story, it's still nothing has like veered. Meaning that that same intensity, same passion, same perspective is still there. Everything you're talking about, like from when we first met and talked, is still there. It evolved and looks different, right? A different type of energy is exerted for that particular piece, but that different level of energy exerted in that space doesn't mean it's not coming with the same level of passion and everything else like that. So, man, that's a testimony to you, and I praise God for you for that, man. Sometimes things can wane in different spaces. And, you know, ministry's tough. And so many times people have faked it like it's not tough because there's a lot of things, you know, socially, emotionally, stuff with family and things like that that are oftentimes not even, you know, brought up and talked about, man. So maybe we'll touch on that a little bit too in the midst of things. But, man, let me ask you first before we get started, because I don't want to get lost as we rush out. Tell me about your books, man. Tell people about the books that you've written and things you got coming up.
Yeah, man. I appreciate that, Pastor Phil. Man, again, super honored to be on this platform, man, with you, any platform, man. My God, I just go out to eat with you. I also realized in this space, right, we talked about like identity and like realness to yourself, that while there were books out on youth ministry, and we appreciate all those who are right, if you should be writing a book, you should. Pastor Phil, you know I'm looking at you. But you already got stuff, but you know, every time we talk, I'm going to say it. But I realized as I was looking to books and trying to understand what was going on, that there was a gap. And so I've written a couple books on youth ministry after the music stopped. I also have written Hindsight. You're in Hindsight, Phil. I asked you some questions in that. And I have several devotionals, probably four or five devotionals. It literally was an evolution of need, right? So I wanted something to teach my youth ministry people how to make sure we focused on the youth ministry, but not just the big event, right? So now that you've got a couple hundred students coming, but what's after the music stops? What's after it's over? Shout out, Lecrae had an album come out around that same time, and this really hit, and it really made sense. So I made it into a book. But then as I was developing the book, I also realized that students needed a resource. So once again, I've been blessed to have a couple thousand kids make decisions for Christ. Once they came in, they needed a pathway. So I would always say, we got to go read Proverbs. So after saying it, teaching a couple courses on it, I wrote a book called Fresh. It's a 31-day devotional. Then after the kids would finish one devotional, parents, okay, well, they done that one. What's the next one? I said, I don't know. Go read the Bible. Like, go read something else. So then I wrote another devotional. I wrote one on what's love. Then I wrote another one. Then I got a sister friend of mine, Sister Lisa McClendon, the gospel artist. She wrote one. I wrote Devoted. She wrote Proverbial Girl. Then I wrote another book. So I have devotionals because it was the next thing for students. It was the next leg. And if I could encourage any youth pastor, youth leader, man, to realize that there's something in you that God has developed that, while there may be a option out there, you have a remix of the option. And we all know that nine times out of 10, the remix is always better than the original. And so you have to make sure that you allow for yourself to use and to write in that way. So I have books out. All of them are under the After the Music Stops brand of my ministry. And so you can go to aftermusicstops.org. You can go to store.afterthemusicstops.org to actually get all of the resources that are there. And then most recently, God has empowered me and inspired me to start this thing called Ministry Pivot, which you were on a couple of days ago, Phil. Super excited to have you on there, man, and just speak. Man, I told you when I heard you on there, I told my pastor, man, I miss Phil. I had him on my podcast, and just hearing Phil talk about work again, I miss Phil.
You too. But
I started Ministry Pivot to really let people know that this is your season of opportunity, that even though some things have been tough, it's not tough everywhere. We look at streaming now, we look at movie sales now, we look at sales of clothing now, we look at the stock market now. It looks like it's up for everybody. It can't be up for everybody and not up for you, not up for me, not up for God's church. So this is a season of opportunity. We have to be willing to pivot toward it. So that's really what I'm pushing. If you want to look at any of those podcasts, any of those articles that I write on there, it's ministrypivot.com, ministrypivot.com. You can go to it. I'm excited about coming up in the next quarter of this year. I'll be starting what's called Pivot University. I'll be coaching and training and leading people around ways to pivot in whatever area of life God has given you, ways to identify the opportunity and move into it.
I love that, man. And you know, being able to have it to where stuff like this, you know, oftentimes we're searching for things for us and we can't find it, right? We need something going on in my life, or ministry, whatever. And then it's like you're writing from what's happened in your world in life, and then not only just writing, but you step back and take a look at it, be like, okay, this is how that happened for me. This is how I can help other people. And then providing a resource, man, for folks to be able to say, yo, okay, I'm not so crazy. And there's some tools out there, you know? Yeah. I teach these brothers at Stateville Prison, this master's degree program through North Park Seminary. I teach identity and practice. It's like the cornerstone or capstone class. And I'm helping these brothers, like, yo, let's start a nonprofit. I don't care if you're inside, dude. I know you got somebody, relative, somebody, maybe it's a church partner, somebody can help you start a nonprofit. It's not a thought in their head, like, I'm inside, I'm going to raise money. I don't know. We don't know how it's going to raise, but here are some people. There's a book called, you know, Breakthrough Thinking, Nonprofits or whatever, Creative Think. And so let's read through this and talk through and just helping cats to really get some information. So like your own pivot though, Russ, like in moving from the work you've done with youth ministry and the shift now, still involved in the university, leading a team of these young people, man, 500 young people coming out on Sunday. It's crazy, helping them stay focused and grounded. But how did that pivot look and that shift, you know, within the church that you're at?
Yeah, I went kicking and screaming. Shout out my pastor again, Pastor Matthew Watley. So he literally came to me, Pastor Phil, man, had to be two or three times, and said, and he kind of mentioned like, hey, you're doing really good work here, but I really think I need you to do it for everybody. Like, so you're doing really good work. And I mean, you know, that effective youth ministry, man, ends up bleeding over into the church. If you do really well in youth ministry, you bleed over into the adult church. And it's like, oh, I can take this. Or I can take, especially with like leaders. If anybody listening, you know that if you groomed a good leader, the next thing that's going to happen is your pastor's going to take them. And you just got to be happy that you groomed them. You can't get them back. It is what it is. But he kept saying it. And I kept saying, nah, because for me, Phil, I was locked in. I was like, nope. Youth ministry is not a stepping stone. I wrote on this. It's one of my pillars. Nope. Yeah. I'm not moving. Until I started to see God do things where I was still effective in youth ministry, but I started to dabble in other stuff or mention other stuff because my seat, I no longer sat with the students. I sat with the adults because I got older. And so I started sitting with the adults and they're thinking about, I'm like, oh, well, you can just do it this way. We did this. All you got to do is change it. Like it's the same group. Because I've always said that there's no difference between youth ministry and adult ministry. It's just a population that you serve. The age group is the only difference. And he helped me see that. And so I finally said yes. We had a vacancy in our youth pastor area for a couple years while I said yes. So I was trying to do both. But it helped me to do, honestly, the next level of gifting, because even though I think everybody's been in this place where you go to youth church or youth ministry, whatever it is, even at the house, I'm sure Phil, you have moments like, man, if we just had this, it could be this much bigger. Or if we just had this, we can reach more kids. And the truth is you can do that, but you've got to do it for the whole demographic, not just the subset of students. And when that clicked for me that, you know what, if I impact their parents, I'm going to impact their kids. Mm-hmm. And it clicked. And so then I started to make that pivot. And again, shout out to my pastor, Pastor Watley, who pushed and said, hey, I really think you would serve in this role and I need you in this role. I started to lean into that. And once I leaned into that, it just started to shift. So now I serve as director of ministry operations. So I serve over all operations for Kingdom. And it's really great. I got leaders who serve under me. I got leaders who serve with me. I got leaders who serve above me. And we just serve as one team. We have a saying in here called we say we together. because we together. And so I thank God for the grace last year in 2023. Outreach Magazine, big shout out to them, named us the fastest growing church in the country. We see on average, God has been super kind. We see on average about 100 people join our church. And there are several other 100 people who make salvation. So last year we ended with 1,300 people joining our church and about 500 people saying yes to Jesus Christ for salvation. And we saw about 100 and some change, almost 200 people get baptized. So I know those numbers because I'm operations. So one thing that I do is I track and I verify. So I know where they all come in. I got to do a report today. It's a holiday, but I'm still not report out so that we look at it and see what we look at year over year and kind of where things are trending. But God has been kind, man. And so we're really busting out the seams, which is great in this season, and looking at new ways and new opportunities to reach more people. And so what kind of expansion we're looking to do with that here. But, man, that's what I'm doing now and super excited to do that. And obviously serving with friends. I mentioned Pastor Gerard in Memphis. I'll mention Pastor Heber Brown out here in Baltimore, people I'm helping do other things. Because the one thing I realized, Phil, is that while God is consistently pouring into us, it's our job to pour out, but knowing that we can't pour out just into one cup. And so I've been blessed to have several opportunities to pour out into several cups that refresh those people the way God has been able to refresh me and other leaders like you, Phil, and also one of my other mentors, Pastor Adam Durso, have been able to fill me up. And then obviously my pastor, Pastor Watley, fills me up and then I'm able to pour out. So, but yeah, man, that's where we at. Kingdom Fellowship, man, making kingdom disciples, making the kingdom a difference, man, trying to kill it for the kingdom, man, in a good way.
Right. That's powerful, man. I think there is a difference with what you're talking about. If folks take a particular role in ministry as a stepping stone, like the whole agenda is that way. It's not, you know what I'm saying? The whole agenda is pursued, you know, with a false, false illusion of where you're currently at. You're not really considering, you know, blooming where you're planted. You're just like, you're trying to bloom so you can be planted somewhere else. And that, you know, what you explain is a whole different. You're organically in that space, and the prompting of God will move. Like I said before, ministry starts out broad, and then God calls you to ministry, and it can narrow into a tighter focus, man. So Russ, let us know, how can people reach you? I know you said some other information about the website, the podcast, or your other information. Is there other information that you want to share that you didn't about where people can reach you?
Yeah, no, I think all of those, store dot after the music stops, all of those are cool. And then on IG, I'm just Rev Russ, man. Looking forward to meeting with y'all.
Yeah. Yo, this is Pastor Phil, man. Church on the Block, real talk about hip hop and church in the streets with Reverend Russ, man. And thank you, Pastor Russell, being with us, man. Love you. Appreciate the longevity of our friendship and ministry together, man. Tell Erica and Kari, right? Kari, then you have another baby.
Yeah, Karis and Caleb. Thank you, man. Love you, man, always, and appreciate you, man. And please tell Kim and the family, man. How many years y'all been married now again?
39
this year. That's what I wanted to hear. So we 18. We coming up, but we 39. That is awesome.
After 8 years, for real, nobody really wants you. I mean, if you're in some kind of when you're trying to leave somebody, you gonna have a hard time. Somebody really wants your little dry jokes and everything else like that. Well, man, blessing to be with you, bro. Love you so much, man. Proud of you, and keep doing what you're doing, man.
Thank you, man. Love you too.
Time to drop bars. A young brother who is a Kenyan runner, Abel Mutai, was a few meters from the finish line of this marathon. Confused by the signals, he had stopped, thinking that he had finished the race. A Spanish runner, Ivan Fernandez, was right behind him, and realizing what had happened in front of him, began shouting to the Kenyan runner to keep running. But Mutai did not know Spanish and didn't understand. So Fernandez pushed Mutai to victory. One reporter even asked him, "Why did you do this?" He replied, "My dream is that one day we can have the kind of community life that pushes ourselves and others to win as well." Bothered by this, the reporter asked him again, and insisted, and he replied, "I didn't let him win. He would have won the race. He was already winning." The reporter kept pushing, "But you could have won." Evan looked at him and replied, "But what is the merit of my victory? What is the honor of this medal? What will my mama think?" You know, the values that we pass on count and matter. And those values must be lived out in order for others who go after us are able to stand their ground. Yo, this is Pastor Phil. Hold on to the values of who you are in Christ. Hold on to the values that Christ has taught us. We will live more fervently for him and be bold enough to not just be focused on winning in ourselves, but focus on them.
Thank you for listening to Church on the Block, real talk about hip hop, the church, and the streets. Back here next week, same time, same channel, Holy Culture Radio, Sirius XM channel 154. Come with us. Tell them it's crazy in these streets. Tell them it's crazy in these streets. Tell them it's crazy in these streets. If you see God in your